to Allah for help. Allah will help us to be able to come to a conclusion, to be able to see what is the right path. And so thus, it is a very clear mirror. Sometimes this can be also interpreted in another way, and that is not just to ponder about the different things that are happening outside, but about the things that are happening inside. So I'm talking about the things that are happening inside us. You know, when we think about ourselves, when we think about our past, when we think about the things we have done, when we think about, you know, the good things we have done, when we balance these two, we very clearly can see, you know, have we done more good in our life or have we done more bad in our life? This, therefore, becomes a clear mirror. And this mirror is what will help us to see what we need to do today and moving forwards. So if we realize that we've done a lot of bad things, or even if we've done some bad things, we should reflect over this and then we should, you know, regret it and be ashamed for disobeying the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who loves us so much, and ask for forgiveness and move forward. And if we have done good things, well, we thank the Almighty Allah for the grace to allow us and help us to do good things, and we ask the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us to do more good things and to give us the grace and the tawfiq to be able to do better things in our lives until the day we die. And so this pondering is truly a clear mirror which will guide us if the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala helps us in this endeavor. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Hadi, alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
As part of a diplomatic dash across West Asia, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Ankara and met with his Turkish counterpart Hakan Fidan. The visit comes one day ahead of the Turkish police raiding pro-Palestinian protesters who tried entering the Incirlik airbase, which hosts U.S. troops with tear gas and water cannons. Demonstrators condemned the U.S. unconditional support for Israel in its aggression against Palestinians, stressing the U.S. is Israel's partner in the genocide taking place in Gaza.
The fierce Israeli attacks against Palestinians are due to the United States' unlimited support to Netanyahu's cabinet. If the U.S. did not support Israel from the first place, we wouldn't see them committing such massacres openly and not even thinking of the consequences. I think the only way a ceasefire or pause can be achieved if the U.S. stops its blind support to the Israeli government in its aggression on Gaza. The United States must use its influence to push for peace, not war. And the huge rallies we've seen in the U.S. and the American public refusing to fund massacres and genocides will push the Biden administration to stop its support to Israel.
In a speech made during his visit to his hometown, Rize, the Turkish president said his country has never left the brothers in Gaza unprotected, helpless and alone, and will never do so. Erdogan said that it is Turkey's duty to protect the holy sites in Jerusalem Al-Quds. He added that Israel has taken a very wrongful step by which it has darkened its future.
It is our duty to save our Palestinian brothers from Israeli oppression and to stop the massacres committed in Gaza before the eyes of the world.
Turkey has been strongly condemning Israeli aggression on Gaza, which has killed more than 10,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children. Ankara has withdrawn its ambassador in Israel and strongly condemned the Israeli aggression on Gaza. The country's President Erdogan has also threatened to call Israel a war criminal. But there has still been no clear and official statement on cutting ties with the occupying regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
On Monday, a conference called Religions on Peace and War was held at Rome's Luis Guido Carli University, considered one of the most distinguished private research institutes in Italy. The conference, attended by academics and representatives of religious groups, had been presented as an initiative on the positive role religions can play in peacemaking or de-escalating violent conflicts. It turned out to be a meeting absurdly victimizing Israel in the ongoing siege launched on the Gaza Strip, without any regard for the massacre of innocent people who have been under oppression and occupation for decades in Palestine. In addition to that, a number of deceitful statements were presented by some of the conference speakers to the audience.
What I'm saying here is that terrorists used violence on Israeli people on October 7, going to their homes and chopping the heads off kids and killing women after abusing them. Saying that Israel upholds the Palestinians in a state of apartheid is out of context. What's happening in former Palestine is Palestinians' responsibility.
UN experts and a number of human rights organizations, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, have argued for years that apartheid is being practiced by Israel in the occupied Palestinian territories. One of the speakers and some students from the audience pointed out that the reconstruction of the events occurred in Palestine made by the president of the Jewish community was totally biased.
The role of religions is also to promote dialogue in order to find solutions. The issue here is that mutual recognition must be the starting point. The previous speaker called the disputed territories former Palestine. How can you call them that way? There is no former Palestine. There is Palestine and there are Palestinians. We won't go anywhere if we continue this way.
At no time during the conference it was mentioned that over 10,000 Palestinian civilians and more than 4,000 children have been slaughtered so far after 4 weeks of Israeli bombardment on the besieged Gaza Strip. One of the issues that have been raised during the conference is how Western countries are showcasing a very selective morality in choosing the conflicts where they express outrage and claiming their universal values. In the same way, for decades, the West has had a selective and biased approach to the implementation of international law. Max Civili, Rome.
As Israel intensifies its military operation in Gaza, public sentiment in Pakistan has shifted sharply against companies and brands that are perceived to be pro-Israel or pro-America. Social media campaigns have been launched calling for a boycott of popular international brands like McDonald's, KFC, Pizza Hut, Coke, Pepsi, and many others. Influencers and public figures are using their platforms to urge people to refrain from purchasing from these companies, which are seen as supportive of Israel and the United States.
To demonstrate our support for Palestinians, we can impose bans on products from companies that are directly or indirectly backing Israel. I urge people worldwide to rise beyond religious or national differences and stand together in the name of humanity by boycotting pro-Israeli and pro-American companies.
The ongoing war on Gaza has fueled a wave of anger and frustration among Pakistanis who view these companies as complicit in the violence and suffering of Palestinians.
grocery karne jaate hain ya.
By refusing to purchase products from companies that support Israel, we can show our solidarity with Palestinians and contribute to their cause. Let's unite in the face of this humanitarian crisis and send a powerful message by boycotting companies that contribute to the suffering of the Palestinians.
As a result of this boycott, the sales of pro-Israeli companies in Pakistan have witnessed a record decline in recent weeks.
Ever since the boycott campaign started, we have noticed a significant drop in sales of the U.S. and Israeli-made products. Customers are increasingly avoiding products that are associated with the United States or Israel, and it's impacting our business. The boycott has really hit us hard. People are not buying these products anymore. They prefer local products.
In response, these businesses are actively leveraging social media to try to recover their market share and restore their public image.
The call for a boycott of pro-Israeli companies is a testament to the deep empathy and concern of Pakistanis for the plight of Palestinian people and their desire to contribute to a resolution of the conflict. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Supporters of Palestine rallied in Seoul on Saturday as the Israeli regime's indiscriminate air and ground assault on Gaza rages on. Those from the region tried to put the current conflict into context.
Killings, displacement, and mass arrests in the West Bank are not new. While we are seeing an intensification in these kinds of attacks at the current moment, we know that this is a demonstration of life under the occupation.
South Koreans are getting the message as news of Israeli bombings of hospitals and schools, termed by many as war crimes, has traveled around the world.
Civilians are dying brutally. The U.S. and Israel have rejected UN-proposed humanitarian aid. It was a humanitarian truce to bring aid into Gaza, but the United States and Israel vetoed it.
Experts say social media has been critical in communicating the reality of events mass media reported with bias.
The media coverage is pretty asymmetrical. Especially here, it is very difficult to know the real voices from Palestinians. However, concerned citizens and civic organizations translate a lot of articles, so we were still able to make the voices heard.
As Palestinian supporters marched toward the Israeli embassy, police blocked their pre-approved route, apparently at the request of the Israeli embassy. Meanwhile, another rally in support of Palestine started up nearby.
The solidarity with Palestine expressed here in South Korea and on the streets around the world is having something of an effect. The unconditional backing of Israel among its allies, in particular the U.S., is declining amid these resounding demands for a ceasefire. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Stricken by grief for innocent Palestinian lives that have been cut short. Dreams perished, generations wiped out in Israel's brutal bombing campaign in Gaza.
Thousands of kids are dying. Thousands. Innocent. There's an unborn child there, my friend. Unborn.
I think we're witnessing a genocide, personally, and there's nothing else that we can do but get out here and make our voices heard, because our government doesn't represent us on this.
They're killing innocents, children, women, everyone.
It's the fourth pro-Palestine mass demonstration in as many weeks, bringing together people of different religious backgrounds. Glenn Secker is the National Secretary for the Jewish Voice for Labor in London.
What we think is happening is unbelievably atrocious. It's a gross violation of human rights, war crimes, and what's happening now actually is genocide.
For the fourth Saturday in a row, Britons here in the UK have taken to the streets to protest Israel's ongoing slaughter in Gaza. Here in London, they're calling not only for an immediate ceasefire, but also on the government to withdraw its support for the Israeli regime.
They also asked for the root causes of the decades-old conflict to be addressed.
And that is Israel's ongoing military occupation, imposition of apartheid, and our government's complicity in supporting that system of oppression. And that must end.
A protest was also supposed to take place outside the Israeli embassy. but was cancelled by police under the controversial public orders legislation.
Yeah, it's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. They'll protect the government that's committing horrific war crimes and not allow people to speak their minds. And no doubt the police will crack down in a brutal way if anything gets too big.
In other European cities, too, demonstrators got their voices heard, despite government restrictions. Organizers here say there are more marches planned for the coming weeks. Will the people in power heed the call that so many here are making for an end to the bloodshed? Saeed Puriza, London.
After nearly a month of bans on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around France, a march across Paris to denounce Israel's shocking atrocities in Gaza was finally permitted. Activists have endured mass arrests, a record number of fines, the usual French police brutality, and more, but many say it's nothing compared to what Gazans are being forced to endure.
Israel has to start respecting international law. They must stop these massacres and bombardments. Everyone in the world, including in Tel Aviv, must get out and demonstrate right now against this imperialism which victimizes everybody it touches.
Tens of thousands of people flooded the streets with intense anger at President Emmanuel Macron's seemingly unconditional support for Tel Aviv, despite the massacre of nearly 10,000 people, 70% of them women and children.
Israel and the West want to colonize and dominate the entire Arab world, but that time is over. Palestine's time for freedom is now. I blame the corrupt Arab puppets and collaborators, like in Morocco, Egypt, Jordan, and Bahrain. But let's not leave out our own president.
France has an extremely large Lebanese community, and many of them marched for what they said are obvious reasons.
I'm a Lebanese Christian, and we know that the Palestinian cause is also the cause of Lebanon as well. If Gaza falls, it's certain that Israel would come after us next, because that is the expansionist nature of Zionism.
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which attempted to equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two. This week, a group of French senators introduced a bill which would make any anti-Zionism a felony crime punishable by at least a year in jail. Macron has finally joined global calls for a truce and also announced that an international humanitarian conference will be held in Paris on November 9th to coordinate aid for the Palestinians. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
On Saturday, about 10,000 people flooded the streets of the Italian capital to stage a new rally against what they called a genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The initiative, dubbed Italy Out of All Wars, was attended by political parties and unions, including Power to the People, Communist Refoundation, and USB. The rally, however, was also joined by high school students and families who called on the international community to put an end to Israel's bloodbath in the besieged Gaza Strip. Ralliers demanded accountability of the US, UK, and much of Europe for being, quote, wholly complicit in the horrific assault on the Palestinian civilians by Israeli forces. They condemned the media and those who hold a posture of selective morality on the ongoing massacre in the Gaza Strip.
People at the rally are also calling on Italy and the European Union to declare an arms embargo to Israel, with over 2 billion euros worth of military contracts guaranteed to Israel in the last 10 years. European countries are one of Tel Aviv's main suppliers of military systems and equipment, training only the US.
Numerous rallies have been held in support of the besieged Palestinians in different cities and towns across Italy since October 7. Despite the media's double standards on the Israeli carnage, a growing number of Italians are finally waking up to the reality of the horror that is taking place in the Gaza Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
At Sankofa, a black-owned bookstore less than 4 kilometers from the U.S.'s Congressional Center of Power. An historic lesson on political control and oppression learned beyond books.
We understand that this is all connected to colonialism. You know, here we are standing on stolen land right now on a settler colony called America, and our Palestinian brothers and sisters are struggling to defend their land from a settler, you know, colonial, you know, Zionist state called Israel.
Because what's happening in Gaza right now is also an attack on Christianity. Let's be very, very clear.
Activist groups led by Black Americans spoke out against the deaths of thousands of people in Gaza, highlighting historic affiliations between Palestinians and members of the African diaspora, comparisons of a tormented history of colonial enslavement and brutality.
So we say free, free Palestine, long live Palestine, death to colonialism in any of its iterations.
Black writers and civil rights leaders possess a decades-old history of relating to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, comparing the resistance against Zionism to the black struggle for independence against colonialism and apartheid.
The Zionists have laid claim to the land, and their process of laying claim is to wipe out all of the indigenous population and claim everything for themselves rather than living in peace.
Activists assert that blacktivism, a black resistance repudiation of colonialism, has a legacy with Palestinians. Interwoven, the patterns of subjugation and exploitation under political tyranny.
This is the 15th year for the Black People's March on the White House to speak out against injustices. It has also formed affiliations with other groups to condemn colonialism, much of it against marginalized populations.
You're seeing the state of Israel, how it's working now to push the Palestinian people out and replace them. Look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. What you have in Palestine is nothing but armed gentrification.
These activists plan to march with Palestinian sympathizers in upcoming days while interrogating how to reach the elusive goal of equity and peace. Colin Campbell, Washington.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, we're welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Farahzad. Stay tuned.
من هو به من عصاه و حلیم یا من هو به من رجاه و کریم.
In a segment of Dua Joshan al-Kabir, we read, O forbearing to he who disobeys him, O magnanimous to he places his hope in him. Here in this phrase, the term Karim or magnanimous, which is attributed to Allah, is significant. Magnanimity of Allah means that He bestows His blessings on people even before the people ask Him. Even in the most difficult times, Allah is magnanimous to His people.
امیر المؤمنین سلام الله علیه فرمود الکریم اذا وعد وفا.
In a beautiful hadith by Imam Ali alayhi salam, we read, Karim or magnanimous is he who certainly abides by his good promises, but if he threatens, he will forgive too. In other words, Allah, who is Karim, actualizes His promises about the people. However, He might forgive the people even if He threatens them. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Farhasat. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
An influential group of economists say Britain's economy is in a horrible fiscal bind as it heads for recession with no room to cut taxes or increase public spending to offer a boost. We take a look at some of the World Person Media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Telegraph has covered this story and tells us more. The Bank of England has warned that Britain risks falling into recession next year as British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak gears up for an election battle. In a bleak assessment for 2024, Threadneedle Street policymakers slash forecasts for Britain's growth to zero as the Monetary Policy Committee held interest rates at 5.25% for the second straight meeting. While the Bank of England's central forecast is no growth next year, uncertainties mean there is a 50% chance of a recession by the middle of 2024. Andrew Bailey, governor of the Bank of England, warned there was uncertainty around the impact of the Israeli attack on the Gaza Strip on oil prices. The Bank of England said even in the best-case scenario, Prime Minister Sunak will be campaigning against the backdrop of a stagnant economy and an extended period of higher borrowing costs. The bank's latest projection for next year fell from a previous forecast of 0.5%, while it also warned that annual growth will remain below 1% for the next 4 years, down from 2.75% in the decade before the financial crisis. It said weaker economic activity was now weighing down on the job market. Despite the weaker outlook for jobs and growth, Andrew Bailey said it was much too early to be thinking about interest rate cuts. He said the next move in interest rates was more likely to be up than down as Britain continues its fight to get inflation back to 2%. Andrew Bailey added, "We'll be watching closely to see if further interest rate increases are needed." In language echoing that of US Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell, on Wednesday night, 1st of November, he added, "Higher interest rates are working and inflation is falling, but we need to see inflation continuing to fall all the way to our 2% target." Andrew Goodwin from Oxford Economics said the decision was a surprisingly hawkish hold. He claimed, however, the policy debate has clearly moved on over the past couple of months, with further interest rate hikes unlikely. But Alan Monks from JP Morgan warned that borrowers could still be in for a pain if labour markets, wage growth and services inflation cool too slowly. Alan Monks said, "Although we think the Bank of England is on hold from here, the vote is already at 6-3 and significantly hawkish developments in the data would push it into hiking further." Policymakers said they expected the economy and labour market to stagnate for the rest of the year as pay growth starts to slow from record highs. While inflation is likely to drop to 3.8% by next March and around 3.6% in the spring, the Bank of England does not expect price rises to hit the bank's 2% target for two more years. Policymakers said stubborn inflation suggests that higher rates would need to weigh on the economy for an extended period of time to keep a lid on price rises. Despite the lackluster outlook for growth as higher borrowing costs slow down the economy, Andrew Bailey told reporters, "If we don't get inflation down, then the pain is worse." Conflict in West Asia also presented upside risk to inflation from energy prices, as Bank of England staff raised their oil and gas price forecasts for the next 3 years. The bank believes that just half the impact of higher interest rates has so far fed through to the economy. Unemployment is predicted to hit 5% by 2025 from 4.2% on Thursday, as the bank warned that the recent period of inflation was likely to leave the unemployment rate permanently higher. According to a survey of the bank's agents, higher mortgage rates were increasingly weighing on housing demand, with transactions roughly down by a fifth and prices down by around 5% over the past year. Its report said most expected broadly similar falls in prices over the year ahead. The survey added that while there had not been a big jump in people missing their mortgage payments, the credit profile of applicants has worsened, owing to weaker disposable income. It also suggested that renters, who are less likely to have significant savings and typically earn less than homeowners, would continue to see rents soar. The nine members of the Monetary Policy Committee that set interest rates voted 6-3 to keep them on hold, with hawks Catherine Mann and Jonathan Haskell joined by Megan Green in warning that the still tight jobs market means rates of 5.5% were warranted. British news report, The Independent, has also covered the same story and tells us more. An influential group of economists said Britain's economy is in a horrible fiscal bind as it heads for recession, with no room to cut taxes or increase public spending to offer a boost. The Institute for Fiscal Studies warned that Britain will slump into a moderate recession in the first half of 2024 as the struggle for growth remains while borrowing costs stay elevated. It comes as the Bank of England's chief economist warned that there was still work to do to bring Britain's inflation back under control, a hint that the base interest rate could rise yet again. The Institute for Fiscal Studies said there was little room for the tax cuts wanted by Tory MPs anytime soon in its green budget assessment of the nation's public finances ahead of Chancellor Jeremy Hunt's autumn statement. Using analysis by Citi, the Institute for Fiscal Studies report warned that the United Kingdom would fall into recession at the start of 2024 that will last for 9 months. It also forecasts that gross domestic product or GDP would slump by 0.7% next year. Paul Johnson, the director of the Institute for Fiscal Studies, said, "We are in a horrible fiscal bind. The price of our high levels of indebtedness, failure to stimulate growth and high borrowing costs is likely to be a protracted period of high taxes and tight spending." The Institute for Fiscal Studies said there was no room for tax cuts or spending hikes despite a six-year freeze on income tax thresholds would mean an extra £52 billion a year by 2027. The equivalent of raising the basic and higher rate of income tax by 6 pence. Johnson said the amount raised by the fiscal drag process pushes people into higher income tax brackets as pay increases was extraordinary. Meanwhile, the Labour Party said the so-called stealth tax rise showed that the Tories had crashed the economy. Darren Jones, the shadow chief treasury secretary, said successive failures by Conservative ministers have left us with low growth, high taxes and national debt as at the highest level in generations. The Institute for Fiscal Studies cautioned Rishi Sunak's government could come under pressure to increase public spending by more than planned as it offered a stark assessment of the situation a Labour government faces if it wins the 2024 general election. The report said beyond March of 2025, there are likely to be real-term cuts to the day-to-day budgets of many governmental departments and falling spending on investment in public services. It comes despite growing pressure to improve services such as the National Health Service and to commit to spending in areas such as defence and childcare. Government borrowing is also set to be around £20 billion lower this year than the Office for Budget Responsibility, OBR, predicted in March of this year. But debt levels have soared as borrowing costs have gone up and the inflation rate remains above target. The Institute for Fiscal Studies said that interest rates are set to remain above 5% until mid-2024, when the Bank of England could begin steadily cutting rates. But the bank faces its own challenge of bringing down inflation while avoiding a deeper recession, which could be worsened by higher interest rates. The Institute for Fiscal Studies said the Monetary Policy Committee may want to wait for firm evidence of disinflation before it considers cutting interest rates. But by that point, it might be too late and the result could be a deep recession. The Bank of England's chief economist, Hugh Pill, said recently that there was more work to do to fight inflation in a hint that the base rate could rise again from its current level of 5.25%. Hill-Pill said, "We still have some work to do in order to get back to the inflation target of 2%. And we probably have some work to do to ensure that when we get back to 2%, we do so in a way that is sustainable through time."
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi...
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the lives and works, the religious and scholar life of the most outstanding Muslim ladies, personalities and dignitaries of Shiite world and Islamic world. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai are the two special guest speakers for today's discussion from the Islamic Hawza of Qom. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about Fatima Umm Abdullah, known as Fatima, daughter of Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba, the wife of Imam al-Sajjad and mother of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. This outstanding lady, she was present in the event of Karbala. She was taken as the captive over there. And there are so much to say about this outstanding lady, especially her religious life, her virtuous life. Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. Give us some details about the early life of Fatima, daughter of Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Fatima, daughter of Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salatu wassalam, was the wife of Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salatu wassalam and the mother of Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. She was not only the mother of the Imams, but also she was among the narrators and muhaddithin in the history of Islam, as she narrated some ahadith from her forefather. And of course, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam, regarding this lady, said that she was among the believers, the mu'mineen, or the mu'minat, we can say.
She would be the grandmother of Imam Sadiq al-Islam.
Yeah, of course. Right. Okay. And she was the pious and, well, let's say, God-fearing lady, mm-hmm. and righteous kind of lady, as it, these kind of attributes are ascribed to this lady by the Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. Mm-hmm. So when an Imam Ma'asum, the infallible Imam, says that that lady was, for example, God-fearing or pious or righteous lady, so the kalam of Ma'asumin or the sayings of Ma'asumin regarding these ladies showed their highest, let's say, status and ranks among the Muslim women or Muslim ladies.
Yes.
That's why these kind of things mentioned about this lady from Imam Sadiq alayhi wasalam. She was also present, as you rightly mentioned, in the event of Karbala.
Yes.
And she was taken as captive on that event.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani. Sheikh Fadai, the important thing about the life of Fatima, daughter of Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba, is her marriage. You know, and her marriage was a starting point for the establishment of a kind of new family tree, lineage, or even we can say dynasty among the Shiites, among the Hashemites. What was exactly the story?
At that time, in the time of Imams, different clans had marriage with each other.
Yes.
And it was one of the ways in order to establish a good relationship in society.
Mm-hmm.
But here, about Fatima bint Imam Hassan, she got married with another Alawi. She was Alawi, means the sons and grandsons of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yes.
And the husband was Alawi as well.
Imam As-Sajjad.
Imam As-Sajjad. Right. And she got married with her cousins.
Her cousin, that's
so
right.
This was the first marriage in the same clan.
Uh-huh.
And after that, the dynasty of Alawi.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, it's not good to say dynasty.
It's going to say lineage or family
lineage,
tree.
Yeah, family
the Alawi
tree.
The Alawi
family tree,
yes.
Started.
Yes.
A golden
uh-huh.
family tree.
A pure,
here,
golden
a pure one,
that's one right.
started. And here, I want to mention to a point which is about the position of mothers. You know, in the history of research, we have a lot of good children with bad fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, bad children from good fathers,
mm-hmm.
but we never had a good one from a bad mother.
Mm-hmm.
We never had.
Okay.
This is the position of mothers.
Mothers.
You know,
right.
when God wants to donate the people
mm-hmm.
A leader like Imam Baqir,
mm-hmm.
it is needed a good mother.
A mother's chaste woman.
A mother chaste.
That's right. Okay.
You know, because this is the way that we can understand the position of mothers.
Mm-hmm.
If a mother does not care about herself and do not educate her soul,
mm-hmm.
so she never can be some capacity and atmosphere,
yes.
in order to have good generation,
yes.
good babies, good
that's
boys
right.
or daughters. So as we have a hadith from Imam Sadiq about his grandmother Fatima, كانت صديقة لم تدرك في آل الحسن امرأة مثلها. She was a siddiqa. You know, siddiqa, if you search in Quran and hadith, siddiq,
yes.
is a very high adjective and high characteristics,
uh-huh.
for people, the special servants of God,
of
special
God.
One,
yes.
like prophets, like imams, they were called Siddiq,
mm-hmm.
like Imam Ali, like
yes.
prophets.
Yes.
When Imam Sadiq calls his grandmother, Kana Siddiqa, we can feel his position. لَمْ تُدْرَكْ فِي آلِ الْحَسَنِ رَاتُ مِثْلَا. So,
right.
فِي آلِ الْحَسَنِ, there were a lot of women there in that family tree. But Imam Sadiq acknowledges that
yes.
there were no one like her. So she is qualified in
that's
order
right.
to give birth to someone like Imam Baqir.
Yes.
But being a wife for a good one, no, we had prophets with bad wife.
Mm-hmm.
We had prophets with bad fathers.
Mm-hmm.
But mother is an exception.
Yes.
That is a red line.
Even the Shia, the infallible Imam, the mother of the Imam was very much
none
different
of, yes.
in character, in personality.
None of them
yes.
were even a usual and ordinary one.
Woman.
All the mothers were in the high position,
high position.
Spiritually
that's
and even in knowledge.
Religious. That's right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Okay, Shaykh Rouhani, so we can say that from Imam al-Baqir onward,
The generation of the Imams from one side belongs to Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba and from the father side to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. This also made us coin a new term or attribute that is, for example, what was exactly the story attribute to this new lineage?
Yeah, they were told, I mean, the children of Imam Baqir and this lady, they were told Hashimi bayna Hashimiyin. It means they were Hashimi, but these children were Hashimi among Hashimis. You know, it means
Hashimi
that,
from among the Hashimis.
Yeah, from among the Hashimis, the That's children of Hashim. Or Alawi bayna Alawiyin. They were purely Alawi, you know, because both sides, mother and father, both of them were Alawi.
That's right.
That's why they said, right now we have Sadat Tabatabai. This Sadat are from mother side and father side, both sides are Sadat, you know. So they were also like this, Alawi bayn Alawin, or Fatimi bayn Fatimiyin. So the rest of the children of Imam Hassan or Imam Hussein, maybe they were also, or Imam Baqir, Imam Sadiq, they were also the children of Fatima al-Zahra, salamullahi alayha. But these children of Imam Baqir, they were from both sides, children of maternal and paternal,
Maternal infallible imams.
Yeah, so that's why they were called Fatimiyun, bayna Fatimiyun, or Alawiyun bayna Alawiyun. This title was given to the children of these imams. Yes.
This field of study is called what? It's called Rijal or Tarajim or something like that, is it? What is it
Rijal, you know, the science of Rijal is especially for the narrators of hadith. And of course, Fatima was one of the narrators. But generally, to talk about people in the history, they call it Tarajim. But if they are or they were narrators of hadith, they were recorded specially in the science of Rijal.
And Tarajim is what?
Tarajim is the historical records of people, different people, even if they were not narrator of hadith. For example, about scholars, about the generations of imams, about everyone who had a role in history. But maybe he or she was not a narrator of hadith.
That's right. Is it true? Is this criticism true that blood relation here is important for an infallible imam? Can we say, for example, nowadays with today's standards, somebody criticizes, for example, the families of the infallible imams that blood relation was important for you? Can we say
blood relation is important, but it is not the only criteria.
Isn't it a kind of favoritism or nepotism or something
not. Let me give you an example. For example, you say that this father is smart, so his child is smart as well. Why? Because of his generation, because of the brother relationship. So blood relationship matters.
Yes.
You cannot deny the effects of blood relationships.
Yes.
But the question is that, is it all thing? So, for example, if someone is smart and is a good person, for example, in charge of an institute or organization, so we can give that organization to his son just because of his blood relationship? Of course not. For example, when Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in the hadith of Thaqalain, he mentioned that Kitab Allah wa Itrati, Ahl Bayti, some people refer to Prophet, all of your Ahlul Bayt, all of your family. So here is the question. Blood relationship is not the only criteria. Prophet said, no, not all. Not all. The one who are your leaders. And she mentioned the 12 imam. So even when Prophet mentioned my Ahlul Bayt, my household, he doesn't mean all of them. As we have, for example, Ja'far Kazzab. He was among this blood relationship, this family tree.
Or Zayd, for example, was related.
So we can say it is important because of that we respect them. You know, when you respect this family tree, even nowadays, we are respecting prophets and imams.
So for blood example, relation does not necessarily no. bring the position
for example,
of imam.
You respect That's your why. Professor in university and you respect his son. Mm-hmm. So why? Because of the position of okay. his father. But do you refer to that son in order to take lessons?
Yes.
Of course not.
Okay. Sheikh Rouhani, any point about the blood relation and the position of imam?
Yes, yes. Because there might be a kind of misunderstanding or misconception yes. of the point that you mentioned. We should know that majority or most of the mothers of A'imma were non-Hashimi and even non-Arabs. Mm-hmm. This is a very interesting point.
Okay.
For example, I want to mention just one of these A'imma alayhi salatu wasalam. Look at Imam Al-Hadi alayhi salatu wasalam, yes. the 10th Imam.
Yeah.
Umm Fadl was the daughter of Ma'mun.
Mm-hmm.
Ma'mun actually married to his daughter, Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam, forcefully.
Yes.
And he wanted to get control of everything in the house of Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam. But look, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala chose another mother for Imam Al-Hadi alayhi salatu wasalam, which was Thamane or Thamane Maghribiya.
Yes.
She was from Maghrib.
Morocco,
exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And look, from this Umm Fazl, Imam Al-Jawad did not have any child.
Any child, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. But from Thamane Maghribiya, Imam Hadi was born.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the narrations and ahadith about the fada'il and virtues of Thamane Maghribiya from the Imam Al-Hadi and Imam Al-Jawad and Imam Al-Hasan Al-Askari alayhi salatu wasalam, you see that how much virtuous lady was.
Yeah, very good.
This servant, well, she
Very
was a servant.
Point. Very good.
Yeah.
Point. That's why.
And also mother of the rest of the imams.
Yes.
Look at the Imam Al-Jawad himself.
Yes.
His mother, yeah, his mother was a lady who was a Kaniz or servant.
Yes.
And she was also black.
Imam Al-Jawad.
Imam Al-Jawad
yes.
has also was
yes, a colored complexion, yeah. that's right.
And also the mother of Imam Al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala, farajahu al-sharif.
That's yeah. right.
And the rest of the Imam's mothers, a mother yes. of Imam Zain al-Abidin
mm-hmm.
was Lady Shahrbanu.
Yeah, a Persian.
She was not a Persian daughter, yes. yeah.
Okay, very
and
good.
Yeah, so only for
there
this
There was a hikmah.
Yeah, a hikmah.
Behind selecting
that's
these
why, yeah,
women.
That's why the mothers of
the
A'imma.
Mothers of the
yeah,
A'imma.
The mothers
that's
of A'imma right. were chosen by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
And the blood relationship does not matter that much here.
Okay, one of the biggest philosophies is maybe spreading out or disseminating the religion of Islam and the Shia Islam all across the world, okay? On that time, nowadays, we could see that how much Shiite, we can say, has been spread all across the world from Africa to Persia into, we can say, Asia. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the life of Fatima, daughter of Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba, the wife of Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, a mother of Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israeli military keeps pounding the besieged Gaza Strip, with resistance forces engaging in fierce street battles with the invading troops. Palestinians have filed a formal complaint with the IAEA against the Israeli regime over its ministers' threat to nuke the Gaza Strip.